I guess there was an international incident up at the International Space Station. Who do we talk to about stuff like that? Why, Rod Pyle, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra magazine. Thank you for joining us again, Rod. Love talking to you.
Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
I'm good. How about all this space station stuff? What actually happened? I mean, the Russians and the United States are pointing fingers, I think.
Yeah, we're not very happy. Well, so late last week, the Russians decided, hey, let's do a test of our anti-satellite system. So they fired a missile up at an old satellite, and it was large. It was about 2 tons. It had gone defunct in the late 80s, I think, and blew it to smithereens. And this is something that a lot of nations have tested. The U.S. has done it over the years. The Soviet Union did it. The Russians have done it. The Chinese have done it. The Indians have done it. The problem is, every time you do this, you hit one of these things with a missile or an explosive or just a kinetic impactor of any kind, and you get thousands and thousands of fragments, some of them large, some very small. So depending on the orbit it's in, and this one was in a particularly bad orbit for the reason we're talking about, You can get fragments coming dangerously close to the space station, and that's exactly what they did in full knowledge that they have people on the space station, which is what makes it really puzzling.
So they knew when they conducted this, would you call it a test?
Yeah. Well, okay. Now that's an interesting question. Was it a test, or was it Putin, as a number of analysts I know are kind of quietly commenting, was it Putin saying, hey, I'm unhappy that Biden and China's ruler Xi are talking, and they're talking about space stuff, and they're not taking us seriously, so let's rattle our saber a little bit. So it may have been a test, or it may have been a demonstration.
Well, allegedly, if that's what you say, if Putin was up to that, I mean, he has his own people, so to speak, on the space station. So he's putting his Russian cosmonauts in harm's way, to say the least.
Yeah, and this is the space station's going through certain remnants of this cloud every 90 minutes, and for the first couple of those passes, everybody had to go to their individual space capsules and shelter because they have thicker construction than the hull of the space station does, and they were ready to cast off and come home if they had to. So it's a pretty big deal. And remember, this comes just months after the Russian replacement module, Mikua, went up there and docked and then started firing its thrusters and sent the space station into a one-and-a-half-turn rotation, which is also very dangerous. So there's been some missteps from the Russian Space Agency, and part of it, I think, is just the fact that they're very poorly funded now. The technology's aging. Mm-hmm. And part of it, again, is this desire to want to be thought of as a contender, and increasingly they're just not.
Well, if you roll back time to the very beginning of the quote-unquote space race, I mean, the Russians have been all about that with Yuri, it was Yuri Gagarin, and they sent a monkey
Gagarin.
They sent a monkey up in something called Sputnik.
A dog.
Was Sputnik, right? Wasn't that their first?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was 1957, and they had bigger, more powerful rockets. They sent up bigger payloads, alarmingly, with Sputnik 2, and I think 58. It was big enough to carry what was then a very massive nuclear warhead. So they were way ahead in terms of capability right up until the mid-60s. First man in orbit, first extended orbital operations, and then the United States started pulling past them. And ever since, I'd say, the early 70s, when they sort of stopped developing the spaceship, the Soyuz, which they were trying to put together to beat us to the moon, what they did that was very smart was they kept building the same thing over and over and over, so it got refined and inexpensive and very robust. Unfortunately, after 50 or 60 years of doing that, it starts getting a little creaky. So in a lot of analysts' opinion, they're kind of behind the power curve now, and we're not seeing a way forward for them in terms of major human space flight.
So Tom tells me, Tom, what audio do you have?
We've got a little bit of the warning that was sent to the International Space Station once the debris started flying.
Let's hear it.
We will need to activate Dragon Safe Haven and close centerline hatches for the next 2 crossings.
All right, station copies that the next time of closest approach is 0706, and that we intend to activate Safe Haven and Dragon.
Wow.
Now, that sounds very calm, doesn't it? I was just going to red alert and the sirens and all that stuff.
I was just going to mention that. But, you know, in the movies, which, of course, is not totally real, but even in news footage I've seen over the years of mission control on various space explorations and rockets, if something goes wrong, you never really hear tension or fear. You know, Houston, Houston, we have a problem. Yeah.
Right.
We got a problem, all right. You know, and they're very calm about it all. I'm guessing
they're
wired
down.
Yeah.
They simulate this stuff over and over and over again, and you rarely hear even a raised voice. But in this case, what is not conveyed in that recording is, hey, you guys are in real danger because we realize that something, just to give you a historical example that I think we talked about before, about 15, 20 years ago, a chip of paint the size of a dime, it was just a chip of paint, had almost no mass, hit the space shuttle traveling in a different vector than the shuttle was, and took out most of the front layer of the windshield. Now, they have five layers of glass, so they were safe. But traveling at those speeds, even a flake of paint can cause major damage. So if you've got something the size of a softball, and there's pieces bigger than that left over from these satellite explosions, they can punch right through the hull, which is why they sent them to the spacecraft and said, get ready to come home if you need to.
What was that? I was listening, but I don't remember the term they used. They said, we're going to implement... Tom, play that again, can you? Is it readily available?
We will need to activate Dragon Safe Haven.
There you go.
And close centerline hatches for the next two crossings.
Dragon Safe Haven.
Yeah.
What is that exactly? Obviously, it's, you know, it has a meaning of like duck and cover, but I mean...
You're right. That's the place you go if there's going to be trouble. So the Dragon's a little more heavily constructed because it's got to re-enter, and it provides better protection. Plus, if they're already in there, they can detach and come home if they need to. It's got its own life support system. So it really is a little self-contained part of the station where you can go to and be safe in most emergencies. Of course, the Russian Soyuz capsule is the same thing. And I believe they did the same with their crew. They evacuated to that after causing the problem in the first place, which is where it gets kind of spooky. I know. It's just you're left scratching your head like, why don't you just fire a missile at the station if you're going to do that, for God's sakes? I mean, it was bizarre. I wouldn't wish that to anybody, but it does make you wonder.
1,500 pieces of space junk, a White House official said the move by Russia would threaten activities in space for years to come.
And so that's 1,500 larger trackable pieces. So the Air Force tracks stuff, I think the size of a baseball or larger, or maybe the size of a golf ball larger. But that's the big stuff. There are other particles that are smaller, hundreds of thousands of them probably, that are in that same orbit in this expanding cloud, and they just stay in orbit for a good number of years. Now, if it's a lower altitude test like the Indians did a couple of years ago, we think most of that's going to re-enter within a couple of years because it eventually gets pulled down by the atmosphere, the very thin atmosphere up there. But the Russians did this fairly high, so it's going to be there a long time. And as we all remember, if you saw the movie Gravity, there's the Kessler syndrome, which is where you hit a tipping point that a lot of people think we're close to, where there's so much stuff up there, it starts banging into each other and getting smaller and smaller and moving faster and faster. And in theory, you could actually have a cloud that you could not launch through for a number of decades or longer.
We're talking to editor-in-chief of Ad Astra magazine, Rod Pyle, who's on with us whenever it's time to talk about things in outer space. And the more that I look at the news reports on this, the more this just takes me back in time with these current quotes. The United States Secretary of State said that the test demonstrates that Russia, quote, despite its claims of opposing the weaponization of outer space, is willing to imperil the exploration and the use of outer space by all nations through its reckless and irresponsible behavior. I mean, in the international vocabulary, that's pretty strong, don't you think?
It is. And, you know, to be fair, I don't feel like being fair to Russia on this one, but to be fair to everybody, all the spacefaring nations have tried this with varying degrees of success, as I said. So us, Russia, China, India so far. But we backed off in the last number of years because we realized it's a problem. And we do have the Outer Space Treaty of 1967 that says, hey, no weapons of mass destruction in space. Well, these really aren't considered weapons of mass destruction, but they could be if you're on the space station and, you know, little BBs start slamming into your hull and letting the air out. You'd probably consider that to be pretty massive destruction. So even though they're not prescribed by that, we should really be thinking about it with more care than we have been.
So the danger of all this is that all of that passed, except for the debris that's floating around now?
Well, the danger is always there. This just makes it worse. So they're constantly tracking these things, Air Force and other militaries mostly, constantly tracking orbital debris and constantly watching to see if there's anything that's going to make a close approach to the space station or to our satellites or anything else we have in orbit, frankly. I don't know how they watch all this stuff. Obviously, it's algorithm-driven. But they track everything they can up there. So it's not uncommon every few months they say, oh, space station, stand by, you know, and they may have to fire the propulsive system to move it a few feet one way or the other in case there's a close miss planned. But this is stuff that you all have to track real time. And the further along this road we go, the more of it there is, the more carefully they have to watch. So there's a lot of conversation around, not a lot of work being done yet, some, but a lot of conversation around how are we going to go clean up low Earth orbit, because if we don't pretty soon, it's going to be unusable.
We haven't heard the term Space Force for a while. Does that have any credibility or application to this kind of thing?
Interesting question. The Russians said the reason we did this, it said, you Americans are being hypocritical and overreacting, and the only reason we had to do this is your fault because you founded the Space Force and we feel threatened. Wow. It's kind of interesting that they admit to feeling threatened when they have, we know, they have a number of new weapon systems, including hypersonic vehicles that can come out of low orbits and do all kinds of damage. So it's the usual game of, you know, we're trying to make you look bad. No, no, we're going to make you look bad.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was their rationale. Space Force made them do it.
You know, I know you like science fiction, and when you mentioned that they had these escape crafts, pods, whatever you want to call it, what flashed in my mind was the opening scenes, I think it was, of the first Star Trek film that J.J. Abrams did, where they're going to crash into this thing and the crew enters their individual pods, I guess, and leave the spacecraft for safety, which I thought, that seems to have a certain familiar ring when I hear about this space station, and they get into their little pods and they get out of there. So,
well, and it's been in a lot of good science fiction movies. In this case, really, they're just going back to the spacecraft they arrived in, because if you go up in a Crew Dragon or a Soyuz, you park it there, you know, you dock and you leave it there for up to 6 months. And when it's time to come home, you undock and come home. So all they're doing is going back to the craft that took them there and saying, okay, sit tight. You need to punch out. Be ready.
Well, thank you so much, Rod. It's always great talking to you. The next time there's any outer space business going on, we'll hopefully make contact again. Rod Pyle, who's the executive editor of Ad Astra magazine, commenting on, I guess, what was an international incident at the International Space Station.